Welcome to Attorneys Are Human Too, Episode 7, Working with Family Offices, featuring Brian DeLuca. We have the privilege of having Brian DeLuca. Thank you so much, Brian, for taking time out of your schedule. So in this episode, we're going to talk about what are family offices and how you can work with them to fund your real estate and business transactions.
Thank you for having me on. And family offices come in all different shapes and sizes and forms, I guess you would say, these days. But ultimately, it's usually the private office for business affairs and governance, whether it's for a particular family or a collection of families, if you have a philanthropic plan, and ultimately how you're coming to making decisions as a family, you know, how you're handling your security needs, and then ultimately how you're preparing the next generation in terms of their career and professional ambitions, whether they're going to transition, stay within the family businesses or the family-led industries that they're involved in, or if they have different industry passions or ideas, and just how you prepare them for either direction. And on the investment side, you're just, again, there are so many different ways that, you know, different families go about it. There's some families that are just completely passive and they just look to hire good managers to handle trading for them or invest into venture and PE funds or real estate funds. And then there's others that still have active businesses yet that they're operating their businesses, but they're also looking, you know, at other investment opportunities. And then certainly, you know, the other is families looking for really good opportunities to strategically align with emerging up and coming entrepreneurs or business owners or real estate developers, and just helping them scale to another level.
That sounds great, Brian. So let's take a couple steps back for our listeners. So I guess my first question is, how does somebody find all these folks to work with? And if just along those lines, if you could just let our listeners know your background.
My background is, I come from a land and real estate development background. Part of my family, some of our family friends going back in our Pennsylvania days, almost going back to the 1970s, have been very active in large scale residential lot, residential, you know, building development. And, you know, ultimately over the years, you know, that scaled up into a pretty high level, high, you know, volume business. And then along the ways have been in and out of some other traditional businesses outside of real estate, whether it's been together or separately amongst us. And, you know, these days, you know, we're a bunch of next gens with different silos.
Interesting. Very interesting. So you mentioned Pennsylvania. What part of Pennsylvania did you grow up in?
So I grew up in the Allentown, Pennsylvania area. Most of my family is, you know, scattered throughout southeastern Pennsylvania between, you know, Allentown and Philadelphia.
Okay, great. And do you currently live in Pennsylvania? I know when we've met a couple of times before.
Yeah.
So just to, you know, really kind of tout social media, Brian and I were connections on LinkedIn, and we established a very nice relationship over the years. And so whenever Brian's in South Florida, he always comes to visit, and we usually have at least a half hour, 45 minute chat. So I haven't talked to him in a while, and I, you know, he's got a lot of benefit to our listeners. So I, you know, he graciously accepted our invitation to be on today's episode.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's definitely been, I think early in the winter, so last time I was over in your office. So we do have a family home in the Delray Beach, Florida, and which is only about 15 minutes from your office.
Yep.
So I try to, you know, get to see you a few times a year, and also still have a residence in Pennsylvania as well as New York City.
So are you sitting in New York City now, or are you?
Yes.
Okay. So can you give us, our listeners, a little update on kind of what the climate is right now and with concerning the pandemic in New York City?
Sure. Well, you know, certainly give Governor Cuomo a lot of credit for, you know, and as well as, I mean, it took.
He went to my law school. He's a Syracuse University law grad. So much respect to the governor.
Go Orange. So, but, you know, I mean, ultimately, I mean, it takes a village, and you got to give a lot of the New Yorkers here credit, even though it's a difficult sacrifice and nobody likes to be cooped up. But, you know, a lot of people for a few months cooperated. They, for the most part, stayed locked down, social distanced. And then once people started really coming out a little bit more, I would say, you know, probably about 80% of the people, you know, have been out and about wearing masks. And, you know, it ended up, doing a really good job of flattening that curve, so to say. And you know, in recent weeks, you know, New York has, you know, one of the, I guess, lowest transmission rates, you know, in the nation right now. You know, certainly it's too early to say, you know, we certainly did not defeat the virus by any means. I mean, it's still present yet. And, you know, I definitely do have some concerns. You know, I mean, you still hear about, you know, some large gatherings of people get together in Central Park and not wearing masks across the, you know, the river in Jersey City. You see the same things, and then people going out to the Hamptons and the beaches, and then, you know, they're coming back into the mainstream part of the city again. And then you certainly have, you know, people traveling, you know, from other parts of the country, you know, into New York. And, you know, so there's definitely concerns that, you know, we could have, you know, spikes again in numbers. But, you know, but nonetheless, I mean, you know, the efforts that we took before, they worked. And if we could just, you know, stay vigilant with, we can make those work again.
Selena's a fellow New York. She grew up in New York City, so I'm sure she's got some questions for you.
Well, I wanted to know, actually, one of the questions is, how has this pandemic affected the market in your line of work?
Well, I mean, now for us, fortunately, due to our most active business that we're involved in, you know, we have a very high margin business that, you know, where we control the, you know, the budget. And, you know, and as a result, you know, we have a lot of room to work with compared to, I think, a lot of real estate, you know, investors and owner operators or asset owners that, you know, probably were buying the top of the market existing product over the last few years, and, you know, where there's very little margin for error. And then also, you know, I think we've been fortunate on a timing perspective, you know, with real estate development projects that we did not have any that were late term construction going into a, you know, a leasing phase. But, you know, one of the good things is, you know, because we're in some of the southeastern and Texas suburban, you know, infill locations, you know, you have a lot of people that right now are, you know, even through the pandemic, relocating down there. And also, you know, and that's going to be a trend that, you know, that's certainly going to, you know, continue. But the other, you know, the other advantage, I think, for us is a type of multifamily product that we build. It's not the, you know, normal rack 'em stack. You know, it's a little spread out. It feels like home community. You know, everybody has a separate door and garage. And, you know, I think that's something that certainly is very attractive in the COVID and post-COVID environment. And, you know, certainly, you know, our different, you know, communities, you know, have walking trails, dog parks, and, you know, that certainly allows people to be out there, you know, very responsibly as well, and avoid, you know, a lot of, I guess you would say, close contact with others.
Okay, great. So tell us a little more in detail. You were kind of alluding to some of the projects you're working on. I know you're involved in a variety of different sectors. I guess, you know, we can start with real estate because that's near and dear to our heart in Florida, and it's a big bulk of our practice area.
We love real estate here in Florida.
Right. So what current projects are you working on? Just, you don't have to tell me the exact, but just kind of the gradual locations and the number of units that you're working on.
Sure. Well, right now we have 14 different projects in our pipeline, you know, and those, of course, you know, in Georgia, Atlanta market, Savannah, the Carolinas, especially like the Charleston market, Florida, mostly like Central Florida and the Gulf side of the state as well. Tennessee, you know, we have a few projects coming up, and then, you know, we've made also a very aggressive over the last year and a half move into the Texas market, and we have several sites in the Dallas-Fort Worth market, and also, you know, very active, or I should say a little bit more increasing activity in the, you know, the Austin market as well.
Okay, great. Because I used to practice in Dallas right outside of law school. So I'm just curious, because we have a lot of listeners in the Dallas-Fort Worth market in Houston. So what, where exactly are some of your projects in the Metroplex area?
Yeah, they're, you know, like you got the Plano, Frisco, McKinney, you know, on the Dallas side, and then on the Fort Worth side, a little, you know, more that I-35 corridor.
Yeah. Okay, great. So I'm not sure if you're aware, but I'm a big Dallas Cowboys fan. So transitioning the discussion, one fun fact about Brian is when he was younger, before the advent of you know, a lot of these scouting services online, he actually started a high school recruiting service. So could you tell us a little bit more about that and how you kind of fell into that?
Well, I did some stuff in the high school area, but, you know, ultimately what I was doing is more the college NFL. I had a passion for, you know, for sports growing up, you know, baseball, football, basketball, and I always had a fascination with the coaching side and the strategy side. You know, nonetheless, I mean, I love playing and competing and had a lot of fun with that. But I also, you know, just had that passion for, you know, how teams build themselves, how they develop players, and especially in like baseball and football. And then ultimately, you know, it's a funny story. When I was in high school, I think that was the year of the baseball strike, and there was no baseball. I had, you know, I had essentially no classes.
The Expos would have won the World Series that year.
Yeah, and I had no classes in the afternoon, and so I had a lot of free time on my hands, and I started putting a lot of my thoughts on paper about the NFL, the, you know, and the upcoming draft and everything, and that resulted in me writing up a booklet that when I was in college, people found that kind of fascinating. And ultimately, I met a scout from the Philadelphia Eagles, and they were reading, you know, some of my stuff and really enjoyed it quite a bit. Next thing you know, he's introducing me to some scouts for other teams, and I got to know some of the general managers back then and a couple of the owners. And ultimately, I had a gentleman who introduced me to somebody over at Fox Sports back in the day. And at age 21, I was writing player personnel content, both on the pro personnel and the college scouting side, for, you know, covering the NFL draft throughout the year, covering the NFL season, and doing it from a angle on how a general manager, you know, would look at, you know, building, and making decisions regarding, you know, their team's growth ultimately, you know, whether, you know, they're doing, you know, they're selecting players through the draft or how they're approaching, you know, free agency, you know, and, you know, the type of offensive and defensive players that they like to build around within their systems and the personalities of the various coaches and how they mix with the players. And it was a lot of fun back then.
Okay, so through your experiences, and I'm going to ask you a couple questions related to that. So who was the nicest coach you ever dealt with during that time frame?
I'd say Andy Reid and okay. John Harbaugh.
Okay, Andy Reid's a little hometown favorite though, right?
Yeah. He was always a very nice gentleman. Same thing, John Harbaugh was just a great guy whenever you met him and spoke with him.
And who was the most unpleasant coach that you ever dealt with?
That you can name.
Yeah. Honestly, there was no coaches that I would say were rude. You know, I mean, you know, there was a couple that I certainly don't want to name because one of them's still active in the league yet.
Got it.
But who was a little bit of a different personality. But for the most part, I mean, most of the coaches, you know, as long as you treated, you know, right, you know, I said that you got along with them. I ended up speaking the same language as a lot of those guys, you know, growing up, because I grew up in a environment where I had a family member who was a coach, and you know, so I think, you know, a lot of that really helped, that I spoke the same language and was on their side ultimately.
Okay, so my next question related to that is, since you were in scouting and draft analysis, which player that you covered that you got exactly right in your projections through the draft?
I think Brian Urlacher was definitely one of those guys that I was on to early. And another one, actually, I think you'll like this one. I was on very early to the Marcus Ware, pass rusher. He was from Troy, and he was just I just thought he had just natural upfield instincts, and I just felt like he was going to be an outstanding, you know, pass rusher in the league, and it definitely turned out to be that way. And I was actually just going to add something to it, since we're talking about the Cowboys. I wasn't sure if you were going to ask me who my favorite owner was or who the nicest owner was, but since you're a Cowboys guy, I certainly want to give a shout out to Jerry Jones. Still remember the first time I met him was out on the field at Giants Stadium before a Monday night football game between the Cowboys and the Giants, and walked up to him, introduced myself, and we ended up having a really nice conversation, introduced me to his son, Steven. And, he was just always a very, very nice guy.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you a few more questions, and I don't want to monopolize the conversation because I know Selena's chomping at the bit to ask some questions. So along those lines, just now we're talking about coaches now, and we just talked about the player that you thought would exceed the trend. What player did you thought was can't miss and miss greatly?
So it's such a long time ago. Who would that have been?
Or disappointment, or didn't live up to their potential?
That's a good question off the top of my head. That one I really have to think about. I mean, obviously there were certainly, more than a few out there, but that one, you stumbled me on that one, to be honest with you.
I'm sorry. Probably any of the Dolphin quarterbacks from the last like 20 years in Twin Reno would probably be a guess, but.
there's definitely a few that, that did not pan out along the way. That's no question about that.
Selena?
Would you go back to that if you could?
You know what? I could see myself someday, to be honest with you. I would never say never. I mean, certainly I love what I'm doing now, and I would certainly say, probably, be doing it at least, hopefully another, 5 years or so. But, certainly when you're in my position, you don't have a so-called, I guess you would say, retirement or anything like that. But I would never say never when it comes to the NFL, just because of, my passion for building things. And, I guess you'd have to say if it's the right opportunity, the right people, and where there's ultimately the right culture. It's similar to, everybody for a few years always asked Pete Carroll, are you ever going to go back to the NFL? And some people thought eventually he would, but, he turned down a few, inquiries. And then, you sit down with the Seattle Seahawks one day and, you see what ownership and type of culture they want to build there and so forth. And, and it just felt right for him. So I would never say never, So I think it really does come down to, who are some of the people I'd be working with and what kind of organizational culture, is in place, or do they want to put in place, moving forward. And there's definitely a few people that are in the league that, certainly if the opportunity to work with them would present itself, it'd be a tough conversation.
I have another question. What advice would you give a person looking to get into doing what you do, or into building, or into real estate investment? What advice would you give someone who actually has no knowledge?
I guess my answer would be to that. If you have no ties to anybody in the industry today, with how easy it is to contact people, I would get on social media ultimately and, just reach out to the masses, identify all the different people that you would want to work with, and write to them, offer to work with them for free, just, you know, and talk to them about maybe some type of one specific item of value you could bring to the table, you know, and then just, you know, and offer to bring that to the table. And, you know, and ultimately, you know, may get that, you know, they understand you're looking to learn. But I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, reaching out to a number of people that you would want to work with, you know, in a culture and an environment that you would want to work within. And I just think that's the best way to get your foot in the door and ultimately learn and start building, you know, your network and your connections from there.
Yeah. What do you think about all these new, I know they have them in California, these smart homes?
It's very interesting. Although I guess it's a little bit of a controversial topic as well, because, you know, with technology the way it is and how everything reads everything today, you know, certainly privacy is a big issue, and understandably so. You know, so I think we have this, I guess, internal struggle with ourselves as a society, you know, where we want the efficiencies and we like those efficiencies, but how much freedom are we willing to give up? How much privacy are we willing, I guess, to give up for those efficiencies? And certainly it seems like we do that quite a bit. I mean, we all have smartphones, and, you know, and we like that. We certainly all like that efficiency, and we're definitely giving up, you know, some levels of privacy on that. So it's a difficult question, you know, I don't know what there's no right answer to it, obviously. I mean, you know, everybody has a comfort level of their own when it comes to that, but certainly the efficiencies with, you know, anything with smart technologies today is, it's definitely intriguing. But, you know, like I said, at the same time, I think we have to have that discussion with ourselves in terms of, you know, what are we willing to give up for that?
So I guess we've talked about, you know, the projects that you're developing. And I know one other component of your business is doing financing or on the equity side and on the debt side. So could you tell us a little bit more of that aspect of your business?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because, yeah, occasionally there are, you know, some things that we look at ourselves on that end of the spectrum. And then also, you know, we have a couple of very close friends of ours that deploy a lot of capital that we help vet out transactions for. And then I'm also, you know, helping on the board of a couple families as well that are extremely active in the market and very, very well capitalized. And, you know, actually just the other day, earlier this week, we just put together a co-GP offer for a roll-up for a very specific industry strategy in the lower middle markets, traditional type of industry. And that was something that really... very, very good sponsors, extremely talented. They're well grounded. They have an excellent strategy of what they're doing, and there's a lot of scalability, you know, to it moving forward. And ultimately, you know, we presented an option to them that, you know, is not only going to provide them significantly more capital than what they were looking for, that's going to be able to scale them up, you know, certainly much more efficiently and probably a little bit more accelerated, you know, than what they, you know, and, you know, probably could realistically do if they were working with maybe somebody that was just giving them what they need today, but also bring in some really good strategic value, you know, along the way as well. So, I mean, but nonetheless, I mean, you know, the overall focus, you know, is always looking for good quantifiable scenarios, you know, that are supported by tangible assets, you know, whether that's, you know, in the real estate sectors or, you know, traditional operating, you know, companies or other, you know, esoteric, you know, scenarios that, you know, like I said, meet that, you know, quantifiable type of status and have, you know, some real assets.
So we have a lot of our listeners are in the multifamily realm. And I guess I have a two-part question. My thought is, what is your projection? What's your analysis of the current state of the multifamily arena, and what's your projection in the next year? And then also, is that a sector that your group would invest in? And if you give it the types of things that you're looking for.
Well, multifamily real estate, you know, has always, you know, been a very active factor going back to my days in back in the day in Pennsylvania. So multifamily is always going to be a big part of, you know, what we're doing. And but I guess I have a couple different thoughts with it. You know, certainly we're still early in the game in terms of seeing what the fallout is, you know, all the economic transition that we're going through right now. So it's a little difficult to say exactly how things are going to play out, you know, in the multifamily sector, just depending upon, you know, how much additional, I guess, government intervention we're going to see and how the banks are going to work with asset owners and ultimately, you know, just, you know, what employment situations are going to be, you know, over the months ahead. But my guess is probably the, you know, down the stretch run of this year and, you know, Q1 of 2021, we certainly are going to see some fissures, you know, and cracks emerging in the, you know, the multifamily, you know, sector, especially, you know, and probably people who follow me, you know, on social media and also have talked to me on a regular basis over the last, you know, couple of years know that, you know, in the multifamily value add side of things, like the 70s, 80s vintage market, or, you know, in the, you know, well, in the secondary and, you know, tertiary markets that, you know, I just felt the last few years, and I started seeing a little bit of this in late 2016, but definitely by, you know, 17, 18, and let alone 19, that a lot of people were starting to buy these, you know, top of market. I mean, when you see like, you know, sub 5.5 cap, you know, 1970s vintage acquisition in like Corpus Christi, Texas, for example, and nothing against, you know, Corpus Christi. I mean, it's a growing market, a lot of, you know, population and job growth, but
we love, you know, Corpus Christi, Texas on this podcast.
but there's no margin for error there. You know, my feeling was that eventually when we do have a transition in cycle, you know, that there was going to be no margin for error. And ultimately there might be some struggles for institutional exits, you know, if you're, you know, investing into those assets with, let's say, you know, a 3 to 5 year, you know, exit plan. And so those were some big concerns of mine. And
I always say that you always make money on the buy, not on the sell.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because, well, what was happening, you know, several years ago, like, for example, you know, coming out of the last downturn in the market, you were able to acquire those assets very, very opportunistically. You know, there was like very compelling situations where, you know, some of these, you know, assets you're buying at like 7.5, 8, 8.5, even, you know, 9, and, you know, we've even seen some back then at like 10 and 11 caps. And now those same assets, you know, they've been turned over, you know, and traded, you know, once, twice, even 3 times, you know, since that period of time. But people are still, you know, trying to squeeze value add out, you know, through raising rents. And my feeling was the last few years is there's only so far that you're going to be able to raise rents on those tenants, you know, before you hit that breaking point. And I just didn't, you know, I just didn't feel that a lot of people are going to meet, you know, what they had built out on their financial models, you know, getting to just, you know, vanilla type of return. And, you know, so I just didn't feel that those were very compelling opportunities, you know, over the last, you know, few years.
Just shifting gears a little bit, I just want to ask you a couple questions about your marketing and promotion. I met Brian through LinkedIn, and for those of you that aren't his connections, I really encourage you to connect with him on LinkedIn. He provides amazing content, and one of the reasons why you've gotten a lot of followers, as well as I know you've done very well business-wise, the way that he structures his social media posts, there's no promotion involved. He just talks about very interesting, timely topics. And I'd love for you to kind of elaborate a little bit on your strategy for social.
Oh, sure. You know, it's something that I've actually done that for several years, you know, where, you know, I'll just post stuff that I think, you know, it gives something, you know, people something to think about or something to walk away from, you know, whether it's a leadership perspective, a societal perspective, and, you know, or even just, you know, something that, you know, whether it's in their interpersonal relationships, you know, or relationships with their spouse or business partners, or if you're, you know, part of a sports team or a business team, there's different perspectives that you can take, you know, maybe some of the things that I'm sharing on a day-to-day basis, maybe tapping into some of my economic development perspectives as well. So, and you're correct. I mean, I do very, you know, well, I really have nothing to promote, you know, per se. I mean, I don't have a fund, you know, I'm not a capital syndicator or anything along those lines. I mean, every so often I talk about maybe, you know, something that we're doing, but, you know, very rarely do I make it about myself. And I don't go on there talking, I don't mention the name Democrat, Republican, or politicians or anything like that either.
That's what I follow on too, because Democrats and Republicans, they both have money that have to hire us for services. Michael Jordan actually had a very prolific quote over the years. He said, Democrats and Republicans both buy sneakers, so I don't want to offend either of them.
Yeah. Well, hey, at the end of the day, you know, we're all people. We're all part of the same society. And the way I look at it is, you know, we have a small minority of people that are, you know, that are very, you know, that are on one end of the spectrum, that are maybe, you know, radical toward one end of the spectrum. We have another small group of people that are very radical and regressive, maybe on the other end of the spectrum. But beyond that, I still believe when it's all said and done, we have a vast majority of people that, you know, are sort of in that middle, you know, and they can work with one another. And I just think, you know, it's all about us working together, having conversations, listening and understanding each other's, you know, perspectives. And I think, you know, over time, and especially, you know, some of the things that we've dealt with over the last handful of months now, you know, even though it doesn't look like it today, I feel like, you know, over the long game of things, you know, we're going to come out of this a better society eventually and you know, mature and grow as a society. Or at least we certainly hope so.
Yeah.
But I still hold out hope and believe in us as a society that, you know, when we come together, you know, we could definitely make something very special happen out there. And no matter, you know, what walk of life we come, whatever our political affiliation is, or our backgrounds or genders or race or whatever, we all bring something to the table and we all bring something to contribute and of value. And I think, you know, if we can learn how to, you know, bring all that together, you know, I definitely have a strong belief in what we could do as a society moving forward.
Okay. We're going to ask you one more question each, and then we're going to go to the lightning round.
All right.
I'll start, cause Selena is going to chair the lightning round. So as we are all quarantined during COVID, what shows or shows have you been binge watching?
You know, one of them that I really enjoyed quite a bit was All American. It was about a high school, you know, football player in Los Angeles, you know, who was, I guess it was built off of a true story. You know, him and his family were from Crenshaw, and he had an opportunity to transfer to Beverly Hills, you know, for, you know, I guess you'd say just more exposure and so forth like that. And it was really, you know, really, really interesting, you know, storylines, I think, every week. And one of the things that, you know, no matter what walk of life you're coming from, they had two seasons of that I watched.
I think it's on Netflix. It's on my list to watch.
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
I was just saying, I would recommend it to anybody because, you know, especially if you're not from that, you know, inner city environment, you know, or you came from a different culture, I think it would be a great learning experience just to observe and listen and understand, you know, what people go through and have to, you know, the challenges and the stresses, you know, that they have in their lives every day. And I think, you know, there's some really good takeaways, you know, from that for people.
Oh, Right. I think you used the correct keyword. It's understanding the other person's walk of life. Because sometimes we're so focused on ourselves, we don't really acknowledge what someone else's life was. Sometimes we're so focused with ourselves and how we grew up that we don't acknowledge exactly what another person may have gone through.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. And today, you know, we just don't have enough conversations anymore with one another. And I think a lot of it, you know, social media, I think, definitely exposes a lot more people today for what's really going on in their minds that they were too afraid to ever say in person. And I think people are quick to get emotional on there and hit their keyboards. And we just got to get back to having conversations with one another and building that collective camaraderie again.
Okay, drum roll, please. It's lightning round time.
All right. We're ready.
Are you ready? Okay, so you're going to answer these, you know, quickly, no thought. Pizza or hot dogs?
Pizza.
Terminator or Rambo?
Terminator. Okay.
80s or 90s?
80s.
Christian Bale as Batman or Ben Affleck as Batman?
We'll go with Ben Affleck.
Oh, you broke my heart. Okay, Joker or Catwoman?
Catwoman.
Okay, that's it. That's all my lightning round questions.
Thank you so much, Brian. If you could just let our listeners know how we can find you online.
Well, if you go on to LinkedIn, type my name in, Brian DeLucia Arivato. And if you go to arivatollc.com, you can view our website as well.
Well, thanks so much. And, you know, we'd love to have you on in the future. This went very well. And maybe in a couple months, you can give us a post-COVID update on the market.
Absolutely. And hopefully we'll have a college football season and we'll be able to talk some orange and some you.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Attorneys Are Human Too. Please subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast host. Please also leave us a 5-star review with your podcast provider. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we look forward to seeing you next time.